Welcome to QUT Exec Insights, brought to you by QUTX, professional and executive education for the real world. I'm your host, Kate Joiner. I'm excited today to welcome the chief of our QUT tribe, Vice Chancellor Margaret Scheel. Professor Scheel joined the university this year as its third Vice Chancellor and first female VC. She came to QUT from the University of Melbourne, where she served as Provost. Professor Scheel has had a distinguished career in research and higher education leadership. She was notably appointed as the first female professor of chemistry in Australia and has worked to progress the success and recognition of women in science and engineering. Professor Scheel was CEO of the Australian Research Council, and she has been a member of the advisory board for Coursera, which is a platform for online delivery of university programs. She's also been a member of the Prime Minister's Science, Innovation and Engineering Council. In 2017, Professor Scheel was made an officer of the Order of Australia for her distinguished service to science and higher education. So welcome, VC.
Thank you for having me.
May I call you Margaret?
Absolutely.
My mother's name is Margaret. Yeah, it's a lovely name. So, Margaret, our listeners for QUTX Exec Insights are quite broad. So I'm sure many people are curious what actually happens in a university and this sort of distinguished title of Vice Chancellor. So I'm sure a lot of people actually like to know what a Vice Chancellor does. Is it similar, for example, to a CEO, or does it have some other sort of distinguishing features?
There are elements of being a Vice Chancellor that are very similar to being a CEO. So you're the leader of the organisation, you're the public face, you're responsible for driving the strategy and performance of the organisation. But what distinguishes universities from corporations is that in addition to being a corporate entity, we're also a public entity. And so we have a whole range of obligations and duties and responsibilities that you would have in a public in any public sector organisation. And then, of course, we have this huge cohort of stakeholders, which are our students, our graduates, our alumni and our staff. So it's more complicated in many ways than a corporation which has, you know, shareholders, customers and staff.
So not just one logic of profit, but many logics.
Dimensions. And so, you know, my days are very diverse. They range from opening conferences with international visitors in the morning to dealing with, you know, the details of the university budget, and then through to, you know, HR matters or media queries, staff development, meeting with students on other matters. It's a very diverse role.
So no week or month is ever the same, do you
Absolutely,
think?
No.
Yeah. So, Margaret, this is my second time around at QUT. My first was with our first Vice Chancellor, which was Dennis Gibson, back in the mid-90s. That dates me a bit, I know. But I suppose his role as the first Vice Chancellor of QUT and sort of the landscape and the pressures that he was facing as a university leader, how is your challenge different from Dennis Gibson's, do you think?
Well, Dennis had a unique challenge of transforming the institution from the QIT to QUT, and so that would have come with a whole range of issues that are quite different to the ones that we're facing today. But in general, if I look back to the late 80s versus today, one of the biggest changes is that no longer is government our biggest stakeholder. So they're neither our biggest funder nor our most important stakeholder. They're still quite critical, but we have international students, we have domestic students who are paying fees, which they weren't up until 1989. We have alumni, we have philanthropists, we have business who we're engaged with both in professional education, such as through QUTX, and also as research partners. So the mix of our stakeholders and our funding sources and those that we engage with is quite different to what it was in the mid to late 80s.
And how does that make the role of the Vice Chancellor different? Is it, I know in American universities, a lot of the role of the president would be in fundraising. They have different, I suppose, institutional understandings there. But does that make your role different from Dennis's role in a fundamental way?
I think for all the current Vice Chancellors, if you compare them to, say, 30 years ago, we're probably almost all are doing much more outward-facing work. And so Melbourne University was the first university to create a provost role and to enable the Vice Chancellors to spend more time out of the university. And it's not surprising that many of us have followed that model. And so, which is the North American model of having the president and then the chief academic officer. We've got a hybrid of that, but I think the importance of the provost role now is increasing to enable the vice chancellor to spend more time outside the university.
And while we say the role of the role of government is not what it was as a stakeholder in a university, it's still fairly critical. And I don't think when I think about that time in the 90s, I'm not sure we had political certainty, and we don't have it now. I think perhaps less stable. Would you agree? Certainty of policy, I suppose. I mean.
Well, yeah. I think. I mean, the Dawkins was the last. Mm. You know, that Dawkins era was revolutionary for Australian higher education, and then, you know, we've had periods of stability subsequent to that, and then periods of change. And so I do spend quite a bit of time engaging with the federal government and the federal policy environment, and that's still absolutely critical. And also our state government here is and the state government here in Queensland have been tremendously supportive of universities and QUT. So it is pretty unstable at the moment because we're in an unstable political situation, and we're not sure where that's, you know, what the future will bring, and I suspect some of our political leaders are not so sure either.
So we talk a lot. I was just saying our MBA students have arrived en masse today, so we like to talk about the VUCA world, so volatile, uncertain, complex and ambiguous. So I suppose that policy settings are the U for uncertain, like many leaders in many sectors facing all kinds of uncertainty. And you have to try, I suppose, different strategies and just think differently about it.
Yeah, and I think one of the important things is to be true to your institutional values and not try and follow the whims of government potentially. So, you know, the more you focus on quality outcomes for your students, the recruitment of quality staff, your public and international and community engagement, then the better you can withstand that uncertainty, I think, you know. So I think... And many of the government settings lag anyway, so you've got to be out in front of that with your own strategies and your own and take charge of your own future, I guess.
Which brings us to those strategies. So, I mean, each institution will have its path of adaptation, will be unique to them, and will probably follow a path from its history, but may diverge at a certain point. So, how is QUT and you, as the leader of QUT, thinking about how we adapt as we go forward to some of these pressures that we've just outlined?
Well, I start by saying we've got a fabulous foundation. You know, the University for the Real World, the way that both Dennis Gibson and Peter Coldrake have both positioned and developed the resources of the university has given us an amazing foundation. And, you know, the trajectory of growth and performance of QUT over the last 30 years has been extraordinary. And we've got then very good bones, I think. We've got, you know, strong social sciences, been leaders in education, in innovative in our business education. We've got a big health faculty that positions us well for where many of the jobs will be in the future. And then overlaid with that is our focus on science and technology and design and creative industries. And so that combination is quite unique but also very well positioned for the future. And so not too much change in terms of, you know, the areas that we're in. Probably won't get too much bigger except in two really critical areas. One is QUTX. I hope that it's going to continue to grow.
We like to think so.
And it absolutely fits with the, you know, so much of what you do is engaging with the real world because you're educating people, many of whom are already working. And the second is online. We expect that and with the partnership with OES. That we will grow online. There's 20,000 Queenslanders who study online in other universities in other states, and we'd like to get some of them back home.
Well, and we are launching our own online MBA. There's a bit of a plug very soon in the 2019. So, yeah, watch this space. Yeah. I did notice with interest in your biography that you had a role on the board of Coursera. Was that Coursera internationally or was it?
Yes, it was. So we were Melbourne was the first Australian university to join Coursera.
Yeah.
And I did that very shortly after I arrived at Melbourne. And so as we were in the sort of second tranche of partners that Coursera developed, and so I had the great privilege of being on the advisory board for Coursera for 3 years, which was a wonderful experience, firstly because the two founders of Coursera were just such clever and interesting
it was
people.
A female,
Daphne Coleman.
Daphne. She, yes, she, I've heard she of, was her speak, yeah.
She was extraordinary, Daphne, and as was Andrew, her partner, and the business partner. And then the second thing was that I was on the advisory board with a mixture of presidents and provosts from the US and around the world. Mm. And so we were talking about our online strategies as they were talking about theirs. And it gave me a fabulous network into that group as well. Mm. But really I think the main thing was that I just learned a lot from
yeah,
Daphne.
Yeah, I would think so. Just the way they approached the challenge and the vision that they had. Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
So I think the strategies, I can remember for Coursera, they like to do partnerships with quite prestigious universities. Yes. Yeah.
When I first came to Melbourne, it was in 2012. It was right in the middle of all that the hype about the avalanche was coming and universities were going to go the way of newspapers and what were we going to do. And there was quite a lot of pressure on myself and the Vice-Chancellor and the team to do something. And once Coursera announced that they were going to go for, expand to a bigger range of partners, we were just sitting around with my team and I said, well, why don't we just send them an email?
So you went on the front foot.
and then engaged with Daphne and we were in that next big group that joined. And it was – and then that what that did was it got us involved with that group of people and made the connections and saw what everyone else was doing. And then it gave us the time to build the graduate online strategy behind it, which was had a revenue stream and deeper roots
into
the organisation.
So a fast path of adaptation just by looking at what your peer groups are doing.
And, our team from learning environments learned a lot from dealing with Coursera. Our academics that were the early adopters learned about teaching online. We developed a capacity in learning analytics. So there are many benefits from doing things online and at scale.
Mm. Yeah, I can see the benefits of following that course. I always thought the Coursera interface was just so smooth. Oh, so smooth and beautiful. And it's hard to emulate, actually.
Well, the other really interesting thing about Coursera, and that's relevant to your online MBA and what we do with OES, is when we looked at where the students came from, they came from China and Australia and Asia. And if I compared that to, say, a colleague at Wharton, they were North America and South America. So even though we were both offering macroeconomics 101, students want to actually
still
study
want to go
with
local.
It. Yeah.
So even it's online, yeah.
It's a bit counterintuitive and I wouldn't have expected that.
Yeah, and that's, I think, what we've found too and what we're expecting in terms of who might enrol in our online MBA and other online products through QUTX, which brings us to QUTX. So I had heard a podcast with Drew Gilpin-Faust, who was the immediate past president of Harvard, and she spoke about her One Harvard strategy. And how she was trying to bring the richness of the whole of Harvard to the community. So, and she was having a lot of challenges. A lot of, she said, a lot of her faculty had like their own alumni programs and they weren't willing to share. But she could see the value of trying to forge some integration, even though it had some cultural change challenges. But we have a similar strategy, maybe slightly different from Harvard, but it is through QUTX, which is professional and executive education, bringing together the richness of research and teaching strength from across the university. So I believe that Melbourne had a similar strategy and we're trying to replicate in some way, I think.
Well, in some ways we're ahead of Melbourne and in some ways, they're doing some different things. So, I'm very pleased with the way QUTX was positioned and developed and has been growing since I got here. So I'm not so worried about our competitors down south for that
good.
One.
We're not worried, are we?
No.
Don't worry what happens in Melbourne.
But what I am committed to, and those remarks from Drew highlight that, is I'm absolutely passionate about the teaching research nexus. So. And I say that from someone who ran the National Research Agency, that we have to get greater alignment between what we do in teaching and what we do in research. And QUTX, and that's through all the way through from undergraduate teaching through to graduate and professional education. And so that's really critical to me and to the university. And then the other thing that we're doing, which is a new development, is that in creating the role of VP Business Development, which we're just in the market for at the moment, we'll bring together what we do with our engagement with alumni and philanthropy, with what we do with corporate engagement, with what we do with research, commercialisation and business development, and QUTX obviously will hook into that and be a critical part of that, as will our bringing together of what we do in the entrepreneurial space into the business school as well.
So for people, you know, in Brisbane, South East Queensland and beyond, we hope, because we have programs that run nationally, they can expect to have an easy entry, so a portal into the university more widely, and they can be directed to the kinds of professional executive education that meets their particular needs. So it'll be easy to do business with, I'd imagine. That's what we're hoping for, I think, yeah.
And I think this, as I've gone around the university there and met with various people, the, I'm often asked about QTX and you know, how committed I am to it and how and much the leadership team is behind it, and I can say that we're behind it 150%.
Yeah, I know, and we're all very excited for 2019, and we're experiencing, yes, to be able to play with more people. That's what we're hoping for. That'll be fabulous. Yeah. So, Margaret, you're a chemist by discipline. So, and now you've been on a career journey to vice chancellor. So, what were the steps along that post, along that path, and what? How did you learn the craft of higher education leadership, and from whom?
Well, I spent the early part of my academic career at the University of Wollongong, which was on an incredible trajectory then, and similar in many ways to QUT. And it had great, again, like QUT, it had stable leadership. It had Ken McKinnon was the most, he was the second vice chancellor, but he really shaped the institution, and he was quite different. He'd come from an education background rather than an academic background, and then Gerard Sutton, his successor. So they shaped the leadership of Wollongong and had an attitude about developing leaders that was really, they took risks on people. So Gerard took a risk on me when he appointed me as the Dean of Science when I'd only been head of school for 6 months, and then subsequently the DVC research. And so in my early time as a higher education leader, Gerard was the most important. And then when I was in Canberra, I guess my best and strongest mentor was Ian Chubb, who was the Vice-Chancellor of ANU and subsequently the Chief Scientist. And then I learnt an extraordinary amount from Glyn Davis at Melbourne. Mm. So in higher education, they were the three most critical.
And yeah. Glyn is a Queenslander. Yeah. We're always pushing Queensland.
Well, he's actually was in a bit like me. He was an honorary Queenslander.
He was a Queenslander for a while.
He was for a long time, yes.
Griffith University.
Yeah, yes, he was, yes.
I know. And it was quite pivotal in some of the changing the public face of the public sector in Queensland. So we'll claim him, yes, as we often do. Drew Gilpin-Faust, to go back to her, also talked about the challenges of being the first female VC. I suppose in Harvard there had been many generations of presidents. We are actually our third vice chancellor, although there had been leadership of the institution, you know, long before it became a university. But are there particular challenges or things that you bring as the first female VC of QUT?
I think not so much in QUT, because I think not so much. Let me just start again. I think there are challenges that all female leaders have, and they're not either particularly accentuated here at QUT, where I've had an extraordinary welcome and wonderful support from the Chancellor and the Council and the staff. But I think all female leaders have the challenge that, you know, if getting the, you know, the if you're too strident and too opinionated, then you're the bossy woman or the, you know, and then I never ever hear anybody describe a man as too strident, you know, but you get that as a woman. Or if you're seen as too nurturing, then you're not tough enough. And so, and, you know, that that applies to leadership, I think, of women generally. It's not particularly specific to QUT at all. And, in fact, you know, if anything, I think there's been a level of excitement about having a someone who's different, but, you know, I'm different for a whole range of reasons.
Different for a whole range of reasons. So yes, we embrace diversity of whatever kind. Yeah. So, but it must have been, I'm sure the provost role in University of Melbourne was extremely challenging too, but a new institution, a new state, Vice Chancellor for the first time. I guess it's been a big year for you, Margaret. So how do you unwind and find your balance?
Well, we have a house out on that's at Beachmere on Moreton Bay, and basically, you know, it's a gorgeous location. You know, my husband comes in and collects me on Friday night when he can, and we go out there and walk along the bay with the dog and go down to the local cafe and, you know, just chill really, you know, pot around the house and don't do very much.
Don't do very much. Yes. So you don't work on weekends very much?
I've always tried to not work on weekends when I can. I, you know, having said that, I might sneak the odd email in on Sunday mornings. But generally I've worked always from as long as I can remember, worked as hard as I can during the week and then tried to keep as much of the weekend free as I can for the family. And but not always, but you can achieve that. This time of year it gets a bit harder, but I've tried to do that. And I've also tried to model that behaviour for the staff. So I don't send emails on the weekend, for example, and I discourage everyone from doing that because I think it's important that you let people have downtime, and it's particularly important for those of us with families, I think.
I think so too. and with that, I'd say thank you so much. This will be our final Exec Insights podcast episode for 2018. So thank you for finishing us off with such a wonderful note. And I hope you have a wonderful downtime over Christmas and New Year.
I'm looking forward to it. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of QUT Exec Insights, brought to you by QUTX, Executive Education for the Real World. You can comment on the podcast or make suggestions for future guests at execinsights@qut.edu.au. We would love to hear from you. If you would like more information about professional development for yourself or your team, please search QUTX, that's QUTEX, and you will find our full range of programs. I'm your host, Kate Joiner, with sound recording and editing by Lance Scaife-Elliott. See you next time.